This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yes, of course.
I mean, my goodness. The LeBron's about to win his fourth ring, right? Is anybody questioning that at this point?
I don't think I am. I know you have a problem with it for some odd reason, which is
I'm calling it a fake bubble title. I have to give the hot takes, right? You know, come on.
Okay, all right.
We're bitter, broken Clevelanders. Right. Anyway, joining us now to talk some hoops on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We've had him on before, Jeff Perlman, a best-selling author. He's got a new book out. Every time he has a book, the scope of which is something I always get interested in. He writes about things that I seem to be interested in. And so we're bringing on Jeff Perlman on the hotline. How are you, Jeff?
I just want to say, as a lifelong New York Jets fan, I feel you guys.
I mean, you're not buying Sam Darnold. First of all, Adam Gase is getting fired, right?
He has to. I've never seen him. It's the worst. It's so bad.
Jeff, our team's 1-1. Our team's 1-1. We don't have Adam Gase. I feel bad for you.
I just want to say, I have a good friend who I grew up with who insists still that Sam Darnold will wind up better than Lamar Jackson.
All right, who is this?
Oh, boy.
His name's Matthew Walker. He's a really nice guy, but he's
a real individual. You know, the sad thing is, Jeff, that Ken and I had for 4 years debated who is a better coach when the Browns had a chance to hire either Adam Gase or Hugh Jackson. They never had the opportunity to talk to Gase. This was the first time when he got hired with the Miami Dolphins. And I wanted Gase. Ken was loving the Jackson hire. And we were all losers in the debate.
It's like when you're thinking to yourself, man, I wish Rich Kotite were here. That's when you know you're in trouble.
That's great. All right, Jeff Perlman, his new book, Three Ring Circus, and it's about Kobe, Shaq, Phil, the crazy years of the Lakers dynasty. So we've had a lot of Kobe debates in this town over the years. And then it would appear, you know, almost unanimously that LeBron James ends up eclipsing Kobe. But one area Kobe has over LeBron is the sheer amount of titles. And even if LeBron wins it this year, it's still 5-4, but it almost didn't end up being 5 for Kobe there in L.A. How close was he really to leaving?
Oh, he had 1.5 feet out the door. This is during the 2003-04 season, which is the craziest year ever in Laker history, when you had Karl Malone and Gary Payton in town, Phil Jackson wanting a new contract, Shaq wanting his contract redone, Kobe going through the Eagle Colorado rape situation, alleged rape situation, and he will not play for them again if Shaq comes back. And there's a point during one game when they're playing the Clippers when he walks up to the Clippers coach during the game and says, "Get me out of here." And he is ready to leave as a free agent. Jerry Buss knows he's ready to leave as a free agent. The idea of having Kobe Bryant, his homegrown product, play in the same building for the different team the following year is just, you know, unspeakable. And at the end, they end up trading Shaq, not bringing Phil back, and throwing all their money in on Kobe Bryant. But he was as close as you could be to deciding, "I'm going to play for the Clippers next year."
I cannot believe the Clippers, of all things, especially because at that time, it's got to be the worst organization in sports. I mean, Donald Sterling is a notoriously, other than just being, you know, garbage, not a good owner either.
But haven't we all dreamed of playing with Chris Kaman at some point in our life?
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, wouldn't you believe, though, Jeff, that this is a guy who was Smoosh Parker his running mate when they won that final championship? Like, he probably thought he could take any team and make them a world champion, right?
Yeah, and if you think about it, the Clippers back then, they had a young Darius Miles, a young Quinn Richardson, a young Elton Brand. They weren't an unappealing place to go. You know, it wasn't ridiculous in the way you would think. You'd think of the Clippers back then. But he really wanted to stick it to Lakers. He was mad at the Lakers at that point. He thought that they hadn't done a good job sort of defending him during the trial. They thought that they were more loyal to Shaq than him. He was fed up with the way Phil was treating him. It was just a very bitter time in his life.
All right, so it would seem that a lot of this book is not exactly going to be kind to Kobe Bryant. Unfortunately, you know, with his passing, there's so much more to the stories, and he really tried to remake his image and be a different person, a more evolved, grown-up person towards the end there. But is a lot of the Kobe stuff you've seen considered revisionist history?
Oh, man, it's a loaded question.
I know, I hate to do that. It's totally unfair.
No, no,
he's
no.
not here to defend himself. But we know what the stories are.
It's a great question. I think after someone dies, I think it's okay not to say, but Eagle Colorado, but he might have raped a woman, but he almost went to prison for 20 years. Like, I don't think you need to jump on that a week after a guy's dead. You know, I think I live out here in Southern California. He was beloved, like just beloved. And I think it's okay to let people grieve. I think the guy he became at the end of his life was pretty impressive. I really do. I think he was a really good dad. Seemed like a very good husband, you know, coach, Academy Award winner. But I do think if you look at the entirety of who he was, especially during that period, sort of when I wrote about 96 to 04, he could be really, really difficult. He was not a good teammate a lot of the times. And he did have this thing hanging over him, which was Eagle Colorado and what happened in that hotel room in you know, 2003. So I don't know. It's a very tough question to ask.
Jeff Perlman, join us on the hotline. I'm very interested in the discussion, the time you were able to spend with Phil Jackson. He is such an interesting figure in sports history, not just basketball. And, of course, he has all the titles, but he also had a different way that coaches have studied at every level. How did Phil do it? Was it just that he had the talent or the fact that, you know, he was doing something different? And Kobe and Shaq needed Phil. What did you take away from your conversations with Phil Jackson?
Well, first, I just want to say it was one of the coolest interview experiences of my life because I didn't think I was going to get him. And he ended up saying, first he said he would talk to me on the phone, and then I asked if I could fly out to Montana. And he's like, all right, you can come out. And I met him at a coffee shop, and I thanked him. And the first thing he said to me, because Jeannie Buss arranged, gave me his email address, the first thing he said to me was, don't thank me, thank Jeannie. Or no, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for Jeannie. And I thought, well, this isn't going to last long. And we ended up, he said, I'm going to give you a tour around the lake, Flathead Lake. That tour took 3 hours. Then we stopped for lunch. Then he's like, you want to come back to my house? I was like, yeah, sure. We sit on this patio, rocking chairs for another 2 hours. Then he's like, I'm going to take a nap, but you want to meet later for dinner? And I said, great. And we ended up spending 8 hours. And he's a really interesting human being. And I think what he did well with those guys that goes unspoken is he understood he didn't have to intervene all the time. Like his predecessor, Kurt Rambis, was the interim coach, and he'd be Kobe and make sure every step Kobe took was okay. And Jackson was like, you got to figure this out. You have to figure this out. And he let a lot of the clubhouse guys, the locker room guys, the Rick Foxes, Robert Ory's sort of guide him. And Phil Jackson took a step back, talked to him when he needed to, but didn't baby him. And it was really, really important in that guy's basketball development.
What about with Shaq and his everyday dealings with Shaq? And these are different personalities. Shaq is a fun-loving guy. How would Phil approach dealing with Shaquille O'Neal every day?
Well, I mean, Shaq was easy. I mean, the first thing when Phil Jackson arrived, and they knew he was going to bring in the triangle offense because he was famous with Chicago. So first thing Phil Jackson, he actually met with Kobe and Shaq and said, Shaq, you are the centerpiece of this offense. And Kobe, you're basically the B. And if Shaq, you're like, that's great. I got no problem with anything. Okay, good talking. And he really confided in Shaq. He treated Shaq almost as a little bit of, not a co-coach, but kind of as a captain type figure. He struggled a lot with Kobe, Phil did, and Shaq knew that. And they would, every now and then he would have meetings and he would say, well, what should I do about this? Or how would you handle this? Or what should we do about Kobe? So he treated Coach Shaq much more as sort of an equal or a peer than he did Kobe. And that's what Shaq was always a really sensitive human being. I don't know if you saw that when he was in Cleveland, but he just was really sensitive. And if you treated him sort of as special, which he was, he responded really well to that.
Was there consternation, and maybe it's in the book, you don't want to give away, I'm not sure. was there consternation or problems with Phil Jackson in the whole change, or even with the Lakers in the whole change, with Kobe staying and Shaq going?
Oh, yeah, because, well, so basically, at one point, Phil Jackson said, I can't coach Kobe Bryant anymore. Like, I just can't do this. During that last season, 03-04, he was really, really difficult. And part of that was probably EU Colorado and the circumstances, and part of it was he just thought, I should be the man now. And Phil Jackson many times thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't coach this guy anymore. This isn't going to work. And at the end, he actually had a meeting with Kobe, and he said to Kobe, I've decided I'm not coming back. And Kobe was shocked. He said, oh, really? You're not really not coming back? And Phil said, well, would you even want to play for me again? And Kobe's response was, you have to do what's best for you. And the answer was really no. Like, I don't want to play for you. And the weird thing is how Kobe basically got a taste of being away from Phil. The team was terrible. Everything was chaos. And realized that he needed him more than he thought. And that, you know, led to the second coming of Phil Jackson in L.A.
Do you think that Phil Jackson's methods, is that something that could ever be replicated, not just maybe basketball, but in other sports? I mean, his style of leadership is just so different and times so bizarre. I mean, I can't see an NFL coach handing out books to all his players and having, like, book club. I just can't see that. But yet it resonated with those NBA players.
I mean, I would say 70% of those books were never read, you know, and – a lot of the times during sort of the quiet times with the incense and the, you know, the candles, guys kind of fell asleep. They weren't quite meditating. They were sleeping. But it was almost this idea that, like, we all need to be one unit and we can be cohesive together. And it's bigger than us and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the biggest thing he had going for him in LA, truly, I mean, two things. Number one, he had won 6 rings in Chicago. And number two, he had Shaq and Kobe on his team. He did an amazing job as a coach, there's no doubt about it. But does that stuff work as well if it's Chris Kaman instead of Shaq and, you know, Quinn Richardson instead of Kobe? You know, probably not. So it always helps when you have the best players. And no, I don't think that works with any other coach, especially in a sport like the NFL. He'd be laughed out of the room in about 8 seconds.
Are you going to I don't know if I'm glad you said that. I just sent Lyman Owen a text. There's another coach that actually sent out a bunch of books to players that happened right here.
Oh, just
in
say
NFL.
Who it was. It was a failed
Browns
coach. I'm
not saying it now. No, I'm not saying it now. No, 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 no. But, yeah, somebody did try the Phil Jackson way there, Jeff. Hey, real quick, I got to ask. Are you going to work on a book about Bo Jackson? They told me you're going to do a Bo Jackson book. Is this true?
Yeah, that's my next. That's what I'm working on now.
Tell him what
you
said.
Go bow hunting with him?
No, tell him what you said, Ken.
What about Bo
Ken,
Jackson? Oh, I said he's the best football player ever lived. He's the greatest football player ever lived. It doesn't matter how long he played. He's the greatest football player who ever lived. 100%.
I have met some people who agree with you on that. So
thank you.
Oh, now he's going to do a victory lap.
Champions pose.
Jeff, why would you?
Thank
do
you
that?
Very much. Could you do me a favor? If you do get a chance to talk to Bo, can you tell him I said that and I'd love to have him on the show?
I will make sure that he knows that. He'll probably call you in about 20 minutes.
That's what we're using you for, to broker interviews. Thank you, Jeff.
You know what? I'll tell you what. If each of you promise, keep your promise that you told me before I came on the air, that you each buy 10,000 copies of my new book, I will happily hook you up with Bo Jackson.
Ken, is it worth it?
One for each one of my children. You are definitely guaranteed on that. Where can we find the book at, Jeff? Where can we find it?
You know, everywhere, Amazon bookstores. It's all out there.
Excellent. Lima, right. Go ahead.
Jeff, thank you very much. Let's do this again. We wish you all the success, and just be careful with telling people that a guy in Cleveland was right about Bo Jackson being the best player ever.
I was right about Bo Jackson being the best ever. He is the best
ever. He's the
thank
best
you.
Super Tecmo Bowl player ever, yes.
Jeff has say, other interviews he has to do.
Didn't you also say that Corey Snyder was going to be the greatest Indian of all time?
I
knew the game.
I didn't say that.
I believe, Kenny, you did say something like that.
I was 3 years old. I was 3 years old in 1989.
When you were on with Jeff Sindelar, you did say that. All right, Jeff.
I called up Bill Needle back in the day.
We'll stop bothering you. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right, take care. Thank you so much.
There he is, Jeff Perlman. Boy, that went a lot better than Jeff Perlman's last interview on the station.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.